Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to Radiolab.
From New York Public Radio.
Public Radio,
WNYC.
And NPR.
This is Radiolab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
And today, our program is about memory.
Oh, my God.
Hey, we're the radio people.
Yeah, please. Do you want to see the furniture?
I think most people think about memory kind of like
filing cabinet.
A file cabinet in your brain.
I'm looking for a fairly large capacity.
This is traditional style.
Something happens in your life.
This is real wood.
Yeah, this is real wooden files.
You file it away.
Ooh, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Then later, when you want to remember something, you flip back through the files.
This is
and you,
the file.
There's the one.
This one?
Yeah. You pick it up. Oh, yes, I recall.
Yeah.
And there it is. That's the memory.
Can you lock it?
Yeah. Do you have the key?
Sure. Sometimes you forget where you filed it.
Let me see if I can.
But it's there.
No, I can't.
Somewhere. However, when we asked scientists about this analogy, they pretty much all said...
No.
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 The filing cabinet analogy is just completely wrong. Period.
Well, maybe that's because your metaphor is a little outdated, frankly. I think of memory as more like a hard drive.
Here we are, about to go into B&H.
You might find it at a tech store.
So much gear.
Can you show me your hard drives?
Sure.
Like your brain is basically a biological disk drive.
This little one is 320 gigabytes.
How big is big these days for a hard drive?
And everything you do.
Up to 2 terabytes.
Everything you see.
Could I put all the images I've ever seen in my life, could it go onto this hard drive?
Somehow all that experience gets stored in your head in some kind of neural code.
Digital information is stored in zeros and ones.
Then later, when you want to go back to it, you just find the right file.
Retrieve now.
Call it right up, and there it is.
Up on your computer screen.
Your memory. Just as you left it.
The way you put it in, the way you take it out, it's all the same.
Never changes.
Never changes. Zeros and ones.
But again, if you ask scientists about this analogy, they'll tell you.
Nope.
No.
Wrong.
Memory isn't like that. Memory is not an inert stack of, you know, zeros and ones.
Malfunction. System is shutting down.
Well, if neither of those metaphors are an apt description of memory, then how should we think about memory?
Well, maybe, and this is what we're going to look at this hour, maybe it's not as mundane as those metaphors would suggest. Maybe memory is more creative than that.
Creative?
Yes.
Yep.
On a literal level, it's an act of creation.
Yeah, exactly.
We're reconstructing those memories.
Construction.
Maybe it's more like painting or sculpture.
Everyone's constantly their own artist.
We take bits and pieces of experience.
Some things get sharpened, other things leveled.
And infused with imagination and...
Out of that, construct.
Construct.
What feels like a recollection.
It's a beautiful process.
It's unbelievable.
Okay, we'll see all that in the next hour coming up.
Right. This is Radiolab. And later in the show, by the way, a truly unbelievable story of amnesia. But let's begin as simply as we can. What is a memory? Like, where do you find a memory? Where do you go to find it? There's a scientist we met, Joe Ledoux, works at NYU, who started looking when he was very young in the most obvious place.
As a child, I worked in my father's meat market, and the way the cows were slaughtered in those primitive days was with a .22 rifle.
They'd shoot them in the head?
Shoot them in the head, yeah. And my job was to clean the brains.
This makes a convenient beginning to the story, because perhaps...
The texture of the brain is very fun to play with.
While the young Ledoux had his fingers in the cow's brain...
You stick your fingers in there and had the sense that I was reaching into the cow's soul.
Maybe he was also thinking, where in that mess are the cow's memories?
There's these rough membranes over it and just strip it.
Can I touch a memory? Can I pinch it between my fingers?
One bullet. One tiny little bullet, and my job was to go in and find it and remove it, because if you were eating brains, you didn't want to chomp down on lead.
In any case, Ledoux developed a thing for brains, and many years later, in college, he'd get another chance.
He was taking courses in psychology.
A professor of his asked him to come into the lab,
studying the brain mechanism,
and work on rat brains. And no bullets involved. This time he really would be searching for memories.
And I got hooked on it.
You with me?
Yep.
All right, so it was the 60s, right? Ledoux was in school, and it was an interesting time for the field he was about to enter. Scientists had just discovered this drug, They found that if you give this particular drug to...
I think it was probably done in goldfish first.
Yeah, give it to a goldfish. Squirt a little in the tank.
Into the water.
Suddenly...
The goldfish...
Can't make a memory.
After a goldfish has learned something.
They'll swim around, have all kinds of experiences, but later, remember nothing.
They won't form a long-term memory for it.
What does a goldfish learn?
I actually have no idea. But apparently they do learn stuff, except when they have this drug in their system, in which case they'll learn stuff and forget it immediately. Huh. And the implications of this were huge.
Oh, yeah.
According to science writer Jonah Lehrer.
Absolutely.
Because now, for the first time, scientists could say that a memory, well, it's a real thing.
It's a physical thing. It's not simply an idea. It's a physical trace left in your brain.
A trace made largely of...
proteins. You know, proteins are the building blocks of memory.
Well, how do they know that?
No, because of that drug?
It's called anisomycin.
The amnesia-inducing one?
Mm-hmm.
What it does is target proteins.
It prevents new proteins from being formed.
It busts them up.
And that means what exactly?
Well, no proteins, no memory. Well, let me give you an example of how all this works. And this is something Ledoux ended up doing after college.
The methodology. Can we start there?
Sure.
He would take a rat, put it in a box, then play it a tone.
Just a 5 kilohertz pure tone.
Sort of like boop.
Something like that, yeah.
Now imagine you're this rat.
Mm-hmm.
Your entire world is in this box, and suddenly, a sound, as if from God. And then the sound stops, and you're like, what was that?
Ow! Hey! He shocked me on my feet!
The shock is, you know, a mild electric shock.
I mean, it's less than getting static electricity.
This guy who works in Ledoux's lab.
Hi, I'm David Bush.
He actually demonstrated it for me.
All right, so what?
Or on me.
What I'm going to do is have you put your fingers on there.
Okay. He made me touch the bottom of the cage.
Right. I'm putting my fingers on the bottom of the cage. I'm a little scared. Yeah, yeah. Ha! Ah!
It's really not that bad. It's like static electricity, really.
How?
If you're a rat, it might be a whole other thing.
Even for a rat.
But what's the point? Why are we doing this?
Oh, well, they're trying to make the rat form a memory.
Oh.
And here's how we now know that that works. It's from the rat's perspective. The moment it hears the tone and then feels the shock inside its head, a bunch of neurons start to build a connection.
Whenever you create a memory, it's an active cellular construction.
What we're talking about now are associative memories, associations between two things in the outside world.
Between and
those two events have to somehow be connected.
It's as if you're building a bridge over a chasm.
And that connection...
Well, that's basically a memory. A memory is a structure that connects one brain cell to another. So the next time that the rat hears that damn tone, since inside its brain, tone brain cells are physically connected to shock brain cells, it's going to know that after this comes this. And so instead of just listening passively, it's going to freeze.
The back is hunched and they're just frozen solid.
Bracing itself for what is about to happen.
Exactly.
When Ledoux and his team see the rat freeze like that, they know it is in the midst of remembering.
They'll do that the rest of their life.
For life.
Lifetime memory.
However,
if you inject a chemical into the brain that prevents these neurons from building this new architecture that a new memory requires, the rat will never form a memory because its neurons are prevented from forming all these new proteins which a new memory requires.
And so whatever the rat was doing during the injection, it'll never remember.
Play at the noise and then shock it and then play at the noise and then shock it and then play at the noise and then shock it and the rat never learned.
It'd be like, hey, what's that?
Ow!
Ooh, what's that?
Ow!
Ooh, cool, what's that?
Ow!
Perpetually surprised by the shock.
So the basic rule is that if you get to the memory while it's being made, you can bust it up by inserting this drug.
So the memory never is actually formed.
Right, never committed to memory.
Uh-huh.
But if the memory gets made, and the protein bridge is there in your mind, it's built and built for all time.
So if you have the memory in there, then you cannot erase it.
That's yes, it's about timing. If you get there first, you can erase it. But if you get there after, no.
Okay.
And that's what everyone thought.
Mm-hmm.
Until 2000. One day, Ledoux is in his office, and a guy walks in the door.
The person who walked through the door that day is Kareem Nader.
Kareem Nader? I would often go in Joe's lab and just tell him ideas and stuff.
This is Kareem.
He's a postdoc in the lab.
I went into Joe's office and said, Joe, like, what do you think would happen if...
What do you think would happen if instead of giving the drug while the rat was making the memory, what if, way after the fact, we gave it the drug while it was remembering the memory?
And you remembered something.
Could we mess with the memory then?
I just thought, I mean, wouldn't it be cool if that happened?
I said, well, that'll never work.
He said, that's never going to work.
Don't waste our money.
It was just a very naive question.
Yeah, I mean, because the memory's already there.
Right.
You can't erase a memory that is already there. I mean, have you ever seen that movie, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
No.
Mm-mm. No? Well, that's essentially what he was proposing.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
Here at Lacuna, we have perfected a safe, effective technique for the focused erasure of troubling memories.
In this movie, Jim Carrey has all these memories he wants to get rid of.
I'm here to erase Clementine Christians.
And so he goes to this company that,
good morning,
that
Lacuna.
Performs the service.
How are you today, Mr. Baker?
And so they have him in this room.
Comfortable? Please try to focus on the memories.
And he's retrieving all these memories.
This is the day we met.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm Clementine.
And each time he retrieves one,
I'm Joel.
They zap his brain.
Got it.
I love you.
Got it.
Could we zap a memory that was already there? Could we go in and erase old memories? That was Kareem's question.
I was just looking to do something conceptually challenging, just kind of fun, right? And just out there.
Joe thought he was crazy.
I didn't think the experiment was going to work. And he said, okay. And so he went away and he did the experiment without telling me. And
a couple months later, Nadir walks back in the door.
Walked in the door. He said,
Joe, like, this is really crazy. But it actually worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Kareem said he took a rat, played it the tone.
To give him a tone and give him the mild chalk to the feet.
So it could form a memory. Tested it just to make sure. And sure enough, when it heard the tone, it froze.
Yeah.
Which means it had the memory good. Then he waited. A long time.
60 days.
60 days?
Yeah.
2 months later, he played the rat the tone, and as it's frozen, thinking, oh no, 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 I know what's about to happen, right at that moment, while it was remembering, he gave it the drug.
And then the next day, we just put them back into the box, and we just gave them some tones to see how afraid they were of the tones. And the ones that got the drug, they behave as if the tones doesn't mean that they're going to get zapped anymore.
All of a sudden, the rat had been sent back to square one. Now it was like, ooh, what's that? Ow! Memory was gone.
There's no memory.
No memory at all?
No.
That was the shocking result of the Ladunadare experiment.
That's Jonah again.
The rat is already terrified of the shock. But if you inject the chemical as the rat is remembering what the sound means, the memory disappears. It's as if the memory had never been there in the first place.
Really?
Yeah. Joe looked at me and he just looked very surprised.
What exactly did you say to him?
You know, holy bleep. Take a look at this because it's so bleep. Crazy.
It took me a while to really kind of believe that it was all true.
Plus, Joe and others had a concern. Maybe this drug isn't erasing a memory. Maybe it's just giving the rat brain damage and erasing everything.
So we designed an experiment that would test the specificity of these effects.
He wondered, could he pinpoint and extract one single memory of many? That's an interesting question.
Right. The idea was to create a memory network in the rat.
So in his latest study, what he did was he taught the rat to be scared of two tones, not just one.
So one's like a and the other one's pips, like repeating sounds of a pure tone.
And he teaches the rat to be afraid of both of these tones. Each one results in a only this time, when he plays the tones 45 days later, he picks just one of them, maybe, for instance, this one, to pair with the drug.
And then the next day you test both.
Mm-hmm.
And only the one that was paired with the drug is affected.
So you erase tone one, but not tone
exactly.
Two?
Exactly.
So do, re, mi, you can just erase re?
That would be the idea.
Wow, that really is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless right. Mind.
Well, that movie came out about 2 years after we published the study that really got all this going.
Do you think they stole from you?
I don't think they stole, but maybe they were thinking along these lines and they heard.
They must have read it and been like, oh my God.
There was a write-up in the Science Times, and we proposed this would be a treatment for PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. People who go to war or have been through trauma.
People haunted by really bad memories.
They just can't escape the thoughts and the memories. They keep reliving.
How would that work in a therapy situation, though?
Suppose you have a Holocaust victim who's lived for 50 years with these memories, and you know, you would say, well, let's talk about what went on in the camp and the day you saw, you know, Mary in the line to go to the chambers.
You say, close your eyes and just imagine.
Relive it.
And right as you're talking about it, you swallow a pill?
Yeah.
More or less.
And so, in fact, we've done that.
They've done that?
They have. Kareem Nader now works at McGill University in Montreal, and he has teamed up with a clinical psychologist to try this on people. And it seems that when you give this drug as a person is remembering or reliving a traumatic event, the memory is eroded somewhat. The next time they think about it, it's not quite as painful.
One woman, She had been raped as a child by a doctor. And then when she told her mother said she was making up stories.
Wow.
Apparently she never spoke to anyone about this. When she used to get undressed in the dark in front of her husband.
Wow.
And so she came in to the clinic.
He says she took the drug while thinking about the trauma.
And then a week later,
she told the story again. And this time, it wasn't nearly as harsh.
She improved dramatically to the point where she was telling the story on TV.
On TV? Wow. So she went from telling no one about this, including herself, to being so open that she could tell thousands of people?
Yeah. She just felt that the emotional part was no longer overwhelming her.
Some ethicists say that it's wrong to mess with memory. But, you know, that's what therapy is, too. It's a process of changing your evaluation of situation, learning new things, storing new things.
At one point, she said, you know, we've given her back herself.
Hmm. I know that she feels better, but there's something slightly creepy about this.
Yeah.
That she feels better because something is now missing in her, something that troubled her, but she's been, in a way, a part of her has been deleted.
I mean, look, I think of myself, really, I'm Robert Krulwich, and I'm, you know, a certain age, but really what I am is I'm a string of memories.
Yeah.
I mean, that is as close to a way of describing the real me as I can find.
Mm-hmm.
I own those memories, and they define me. But you're saying that you can come to me when I'm already formed, when I'm already there. You can give me a shot, and you can fundamentally change me.
There's an assumption in what you're saying, which is actually kind of wrong. There really isn't anything like a real memory. I mean, think about it. If you can erase a memory while it's being created, that's how we started. And now we learn you can erase a memory while it's being remembered using the same drug.
Yeah.
What that really means is that every time you are remembering something, you're actually recreating it. That's the only reason the drug works. And so if you're recreating it each time, then each time you're remembering something, it's a brand new memory.
Well, no, but I've always kind of assumed that underneath all this remembering, there's some kind of special, absolutely original memory locked in a vault somewhere.
No, no. That is the crazy implication of this experiment.
The act of remembering, on a literal level, it's an act of creation. Every memory is rebuilt anew every time you remember it.
And not only is it an act of creation, as Jonah says, Kareem would say, it's an act of imagination.
Every time you remember something, you're changing the memory a little bit. We're always changing the memory slightly.
You think you're remembering something that took place 30 years ago. Actually, what you're remembering is that memory reinterpreted in the light of today, in the light of now.
So does that mean that there's no such thing as a memory for all time that hides in a secret vault somewhere, that all you've got is the most recent recollection of the experience?
Yes.
Well, then how do I know that any memory is verifiably true?
You don't. You don't. And one of the ironies of this research is that the more you remember something, in a sense, the less accurate it becomes. The more it becomes about you and the less it becomes about what actually happened.
So let's do something. Imagine a couple in love and it's their first kiss. He kisses her and she kisses him back. She remembers the kiss, of course, and mm-hmm. he remembers the kiss, of course. Mm-hmm. As they go through the rest of their romance and the next 36 years together, the kiss will essentially become replaced by two independently re-embroidered and increasingly dishonest kisses?
Assuming they think about the kiss enough. That's kind of what the theory implies.
But certainly there's got to be somewhere between the man and the woman, there's got to be some true kiss, or is that kiss just gone?
That true kiss vanished the minute their lips separated. Huh. As soon as reality happens, it begins diverging in, you know, all our different brains on a very synaptic level.
Here's where you cue the really sad music.
They just grow slowly farther and farther apart.
Well, let me do it a different way. Let's suppose that Joan and Bob kiss and then they part. It's a great kiss.
Uh-huh.
And then they never think about it again. I mean, it was a great kiss in the moment, but they never think about it again.
Yeah.
30 years later, Bob is in a railroad station. Joan comes out of a train. Their eyes meet. Bob sees Joan, sees her eyes, and remembers suddenly that kiss.
That memory is more honest than if he'd been thinking about the kiss every day of his life since.
Oh. You know, that's even sadder.
You know it, but it's true. That's what scientists say.
Absolutely. We had a conference last week, and Yadin Dudai was here, and he proposed that the safest memory, a memory that's uncontaminatable, is one that exists in a patient with amnesia.
What I meant is that there is a sort of a paradox.
This is Yadin?
This is Yadin.
And I'm a professor in Israel.
Reporter Anne Hepperman tracked him down for us.
Intuitively, you think if you use a memory, you know better because you remember it better, you recall it better, you know the details better, and so on and so on. But this is not what science shows. If you have a memory, the more you use it, the more you're likely to change it. So if you never use your memory, it's secured. So taking it a bit farther, the safest memories are the memories which are in the brain of people who cannot remember.
Okay, well, I guess we should go to break now.
Oh, yeah. So we should tell you that Joan Allaire is the author of a new book called Proust, was a neuroscientist.
And Joseph Ledoux from NYU before him, he also wrote a book called The Emotional Brain. And Kareem Nader, I don't think he's written a book, but he will.
I'm sure he will.
And also thanks to our producer, Anne Hepperman.
And if you need more information or you want to hear anything again, one word, radiolab.org.
Radiolab will continue in a moment.